Hey, it's Juliet.
This is Leisha.
And welcome back to Screen Tea Podcast. Fan requested movies.
Yeah, we're to these weeks. We had our break last week.
Mm-hmm.
It was lovely.
We didn't really watch any movies, though.
We did.
Sort of.
But we did. We watched The Lodge.
Yeah. When was that again? That was Sunday? Saturday?
It was like the very ass end of our break.
Yeah.
It is a good watch, though.
Yeah.
I lost sleep over it.
I did not.
It was like a gold star watch for me. Any horror movie that makes me lose sleep, which has only been like three in my whole life, is like gold star, gold star, gold star.
Like one every 10 years.
Yeah, basically. Statistically, yes. That's like the average.
The movie that we're doing this week had the most votes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Shaun of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
But before we jump into it, what are you drinking?
Oh, wow. You're just moving us right the fuck along, aren't you? Like, no relaxing, no talking, no. You're just like, fuck, let's get this rock and rolling. I see.
It is 9:30.
I give no shits, dude. We've missed a whole last week. I am drinking something delightful called Snowflake Tea Chest.
Okay.
Which we bought from a Mennonite store.
Oh, this is where you got the odors.
Here in Virginia. So it's like legitimate Virginia tea, and it's delicious. It's black tea with cinnamon and vanilla and cool peppermint. And it's made by Loose Leaf Tea Company. Mm. And it's really freaking delicious.
So, I don't have the details on mine, but I feel like you've already talked about the details. Yeah, so I've got the hot cinnamon sunset, which is just like a watered-down fireball drink.
Seriously.
Sans alcohol.
It's so big red gum in your mouth.
It's delicious.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You realize that's caffeinated.
Yeah, I know.
You're going to have a fun night.
We'll see.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like Jewel said, this was the movie that had the most votes for fan requests, which means next week, the movie that came in second is Knives Out.
Yeah.
So, which I'm really excited for because I really enjoyed that movie.
For sure, yeah. It was good.
It'll be fun. Mm-hmm. It'll be, doing the research, I feel, is going to be a task and a half. So I can't wait.
Mm-hmm.
We gave Jewel's... even though she did the research for the film that she chose last episode, which was Up in the Air, we decided she would do the research for this one. Why, Jules?
It's my favorite movie. And it still is. Yeah. Even after I couldn't tell you the last time I actually watched this.
We haven't watched it together. And this is our first time ever watching it together.
Oh, yeah.
And how long have we been together?
A while.
This is a test. This is a pass-fail.
7.
Good job. You pass for now. Yeah, so you haven't seen it, at least with me. So, sat down and watched it in, 7 years.
I mean, I've seen it. I've, like, sat down and watched it by myself.
Hmm. When?
It's been years.
This is a test. So, yeah. This is Juliet's favorite, like, all-time favorite. So, somehow... this lucky, lucky woman got her favorite movie voted in. How did that happen? I'm very envious of you.
Wait, what's your favorite? Oh, I know your favorite movie. Your favorite movie's a great movie, too.
Yeah.
I just don't know how many people have really actually seen it because you have to read subtitles.
Mine's a little more obscure.
Mm-hmm.
But great. We'll get to it one day. But yeah, so I'm excited for you that we got to watch this one.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, so fan favorites this week, next week. So we're about to do our real question. Don't play the music yet when you're editing the music because I'm going to explain a thing.
Okay.
This isn't the real question. We're going to change our format for a little while. So if you're on our social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook and whatnot, we're going to start posting up the real question when we announce the movie for the following week. So we're going to do it ahead of time, like smart people. This is actually Juliet's idea. I don't know why I'm explaining it. So that we can share some of your answers when we record the episodes.
Yeah, and not like post a billion things in one day.
Yeah.
And spread that shit out.
I don't know what I'm doing. So we're figuring this shit out as we go.
I feel like it should be posted on Mondays.
We record on Mondays or Tuesdays.
Fine.
So I disagree. We're figuring this out as we record.
Yeah.
I feel like we will post it on Fridays.
So much posting within the same... Anyway.
So, we got some shit to figure out. However, we'll give you the opportunity to actually answer so we can share your answers.
Yes.
During the podcast.
Yeah.
Like smart people. Which...
This is a hobby.
Yeah. We don't do this for money. Oh. Wah, wah. Oh my god, there's no way we would ever make money off of this anyway.
Like, you owe us for listening to you.
Yeah, we should be, like, paying you money to listen to this shit. However, this is Jules. When you do your editing magic, this is where you'll play the music. Are you ready? Here comes this week's real question. Okay. What movie have you seen in the theater multiple times? I even told you I was gonna ask the question, not when you sip the tea.
I've seen a couple movies multiple times in the theater, but the one that I've seen the most, I think, was four times, was Finding Nemo.
Oh, that's adorable.
But I want to say this, we did the question this way because I didn't think the original question that had come to mind would make sense for a lot of people. The original question that came to mind was, what movie have you watched multiple times in a row? I don't know many people who have done that. Mm-hmm. And the reason why that came to my mind was the very first time I saw this movie, Shaun of the Dead, I literally watched it four times in a row. Mm-hmm. I spent a day watching this movie when I was like 15.
Aww.
So I didn't think that would be applicable to a lot of people. Sure, so switched it up to seeing a movie in theaters multiple times.
Yeah. I think that'd be a kind of a more memorable thing for people and probably more applicable.
Yeah.
I'm going to answer both, just like you did. Although I have multiple answers for the first one. Have you met me? What movie have you seen in the theater multiple times? So, leading my slew of movies, I will say I have seen so many movies twice.
I have not.
So many. Like, I cannot count. Even with me, you haven't seen movies
I don't think
twice?
We have. Maybe one or two movies.
Yeah. Well, like, I know you saw Civil War with me, I think three times. The original time, then we saw it with your mom and your brother, and I think we saw it with friends as well. So I'm pretty sure you saw Captain America Civil War with me three times.
Y'all can't see the face I'm making.
She can't. It's a thoughtful face, but I'm right.
It's a face of disbelief.
That is the movie that I've seen the most in movie theater. I saw Captain America Civil War six times in the movie theater.
Jesus Christ.
The same year, the same fucking summer, I saw Star Trek Beyond five times in the movie theater. This was the summer where I fell hard into Marvel and Star Trek. So it was a summer. I saw Iron Man 2 three times, and I saw Sherlock Holmes Game of Shadows three times.
I actually saw Avatar three times and the first Pirates movie three times.
Holy shit, you saw Avatar three times? You spent half your life in the movie theater for that movie?
I saw it with friends, and I think once with my mom.
Aw.
It was different friends, different times, and then I think I saw it with my mom and/or my brother.
But yeah, just the amount of times I've seen movies twice. Even Endgame, I saw without you and then I saw with you.
That was happenstance.
Yeah, that was happenstance. But and then movies that I've watched back to back. This won't be an official question, but it's funny because for the longest time before seeing Pan's Labyrinth, The Matrix was my favorite movie. From Pan's Labyrinth was what, 2005, I think? 2005? Or 2006. It came out in one of those years. So from like from 99 or maybe 2000 to when Pan's Labyrinth came out. So for a solid 5 or 6 years, Matrix was my favorite movie. The first two times I tried to watch it, my dad tried to show it to me, I fell asleep.
Yeah, I know this. Yeah.
And it was like my dad knew that I would really like it, and I think it pissed him off a little bit because he tried to show it to me twice. I fell asleep midway. It was whatever. I didn't care about it. The first time I watched it all the way through, I immediately watched it again. So that was kind of, you know, that's an instance where I remember. And then when we recently watched Hamilton, I immediately wanted to watch it again also.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, I have that temptation a lot, but usually not the time. So, yeah.
I just watch fucking Disney movies with the kid on repeat.
Yes. We watch the beginning of movies a lot. Yeah. Over and over and over and over. I hear the intro song to 101 Dalmatians in my fucking sleep.
At least that's like nice jazz and it's not Toy Story.
It is, yeah. This is like the 1961 101 Dalmatians, so it is nice smooth jazz.
Yeah.
And not the jarring like fucking Pixar music that of other things.
The Toy Story 2 is Buzz Lightyear, so it's a bunch of sci-fi sound effects like right in your ear.
Yeah, that's true. Now I know what it must have felt like when I watched like Charlotte's Web so many times that I broke how many VHSs when I was young. And, yeah. So those young child habits notwithstanding. And then there's, of course, the movies that we just watch count times. I dropped the microphone.
Rude. Poor Mike.
I'm sorry.
Sorry for the sounds of tightening the screw. I just don't want it to fall again.
I'm sorry, baby Yeti. I didn't mean
Thunk. It's not going to get edited out.
Oh, that's probably ear shattering.
Maybe. I don't know if we were talking around it.
She'll figure it out.
Yeah.
In a way that doesn't bust your face.
It might get real quiet for a second.
Yeah. If it did, that's where I accidentally busted your face. Anyway.
Not my face.
Y'all's face.
With the sound.
All right. That's no nonsense. All right, Jules, you want to kick us off with this beautiful, beautiful thing?
Shaun of the Dead. Yeah. Whee! Which was originally going to be called Tea Time of the Dead.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad they changed it.
Yeah. That's when it was like a one-page Word document.
Cute.
Shaun of the Dead came out in 2004. I did not see it in theaters. I had to rent it. So it was probably like 2005 when I rented it. So it's 15. Anyway, this is directed by the wonderful Edgar Wright, whose other directing credits are Hot Fuzz, which he also wrote, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, which he also wrote, The World's End, which he also wrote, Baby Driver, which he also wrote.
I'm so sorry, it's just my, like, need to say co-wrote Hot Fuzz, World's End. I'm done.
Okay, well, so, okay. Written by Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright.
Thank you.
I was getting there.
Continue.
Jesus. Impatient. Pegg's other notable film credits are Spaced, which is a TV show, which is what he and Edgar Wright are basically known for. Hot Fuzz.
Duck noise.
And Star Trek Beyond.
Did he not co-write The World's End? Was I wrong?
I don't recall. He might have. I mean, they worked on this stuff together.
Continue.
Falsifying information.
Oh, well, or you didn't give him the right...
I was trying to mix it up.
Well.
Since there's a lot of overlap with all of these people.
Oh, yeah, I can only imagine. So,
yeah. Okay, Wright's other notable film writing credits are Grindhouse. He did the fake trailer segment, Don't. He wrote The Adventures of Tintin, and he co-wrote Ant-Man.
Oh, no shit.
Huh. Yeah, we did that when we covered Marvel stuff.
Simon Pegg did also co-write The World's End.
Okay, well, it's, you know, the Blood and Ice Cream trilogy.
Cornetto.
This was produced by Rogue Pictures, Studio Canal, Working Title Films, WT2 Productions, Big Talk Productions, Inside Track 2, and Film 4. Some individuals that produced were Tim Bevan, Eric Fellner, Mark Hudson, Allison Owen, Neera Park, Ronaldo Vasconcelos, sorry, Natasha Wharton, and James Wilson. Your face.
Sorry.
I can't read, nor can I pronounce names.
It's not, one of us always has to have the one-off, sorry for fucking up your name per episode, it's or else it wouldn't be an episode of this show.
We should rename the podcast to I Can't Pronounce Shit.
Podcast. The cinematographer, DP, was David M. Dunlap, who's also known for 39 episodes of Gossip Girl, 16 episodes of House of Cards, Noice, and 2 episodes of Orange is the New Black. This film was edited by Chris Dickens, whose other notable films include Slumdog Millionaire, Les Mis, and Rocketman. Mm-hmm. Also very nice. Soundtrack and composing was by Dan Mudford and Pete Woodhead, whose other credits include, for Mudford, The Acid House, Threads of Life, which was a TV movie documentary, and Neanderthal, which was also a TV movie documentary. And for Woodhead was Millions, and he worked on visual effects.
It was literally that and Shaun of the Dead.
Wow. Mm. I mean, good for him.
Yep. I think he's a friend of Wright. Mm. So I think it was just like, you like horror films, you like zombie films, help me with this, basically.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a killer soundtrack, uh-huh. So kudos.
Starring Simon Pegg, who plays Sean. He's known for the Star Trek reboots, Paul, and 6 of like the 8 Mission Impossible movies, among other movies. Mm. He's got like over 100 acting credits. Kate Ashfield, who plays Liz, she is known for Beyond Borders, Late Night Shopping, and Guest House Paradiso. Then we have Nick Frost, who plays Ed. He's also known for Paul, Attack the Block, and Into the Badlands, which is a TV show. We have Lucy Davis, who plays Diane, or also known as Di. She was in Wonder Woman, The Office UK TV show, and The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Next, we have Dylan Moran, who plays David. He is known for Black Books, Run, Fat Boy, Run, and Notting Hill.
David. Ew, David.
Yeah, really, this David sucks.
Really. All right, to round it up, we have Penelope Wilton, who plays Barbara. Penelope is known for Downton Abbey, The Best Exotic Marigold Motel, and Matchpoint. We have the lovely Bill Nye, who plays Philip. He is known for Love Actually, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, and Page 8, and 75,000 billion other things.
Yes.
We have Peter Serafinowicz, who plays Pete. Convenient. He is known for Guardians of the Galaxy, Spy, and The Tick. Oh!
Mm-hmm.
His face. Okay,
he also does the voice of Darth Maul.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Thank you for throwing that in. And then we have Rafe Spall, who plays Noel, and Rafe was in The Big Short, Life of Pi, and The Ritual.
He is also in Hot Fuzz and The World's End.
Ah, so he's a reoccurring.
He's kind of like an honorable mention, to be honest. I had to include him.
And then, is that Netflix's The Ritual?
Yes.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. He blew up. He's yeah. A pretty big actor, right?
Yeah, I can picture him in that movie now that mm-hmm. I think about it. Yeah, I was watching this and I was like, your face. That's where
you're. Well, he's so young and he's a little mm-hmm. bit bigger. And as he's gotten older, he's thinned out a little bit. And it's just like.
Yeah, good for him.
Mm-hmm. Some actor's notes. Coldplay lead singer Chris Martin plays 2 roles in the film, appearing first as a background zombie and later as himself hawking a product called Zombade on TV. Side note, Simon Pegg and Chris Martin are best buddies.
Aren't one of them like godfathers to the other's children, etc.?
Or both, yeah, like vice versa, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Interesting.
Yes, they are good friends. And then one of them, I think Simon's also a godparent to one of Martin Freeman's kids.
That doesn't surprise me.
They're all buddies.
Yeah.
And another one, all of the news readers and television presenters are real people portraying themselves.
I love when that happens. Mm-hmm. The budget for Shaun of the Dead was $6.1 million US, and it earned $30 million US. So, hey, that's a good fucking return.
Mm-hmm.
Critically, Shaun of the Dead. Oh, this is interesting. These numbers are kind of all over the place. Critically, on Rotten Tomatoes, the aggregate score is 92%. Metacritic, it is fucking words, bro.
Right.
Sitting at a 76. 76 is a hard number to say.
The user on Metacritic was like 80-something.
So really all over the place. Yeah. Audience scores, Rotten Tomatoes sitting at a 93%, and IMDb a 7.9.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, we're all over the place for interesting factoids from Screen Rant, Movie Phone, and Mental Floss this
week. I tried. A lot of them did overlap, so I was just trying to mix it up.
Yeah.
But this movie's been around for so long, everybody's basically copying everybody at this point, so it's just like...
That's the way it usually works, yeah.
Everything's made the rounds. So interesting factoids. Number one, Shaun of the Dead is the first entry in the Three Flavors Cornetto trilogy, which also includes 2007's Hot Fuzz and 2013's The World's End. Excuse me. The three films are linked by the fact that they each star Peg and Frost, and each feature a reference to a different flavor of Cornetto ice cream. I've actually never heard of it referred to as the Three Flavors Cornetto trilogy.
In full.
Yeah, I've always heard it referred to as the Blood and Ice Cream trilogy.
Or the Cornetto trilogy.
Mm-mm. Just literally Blood and Ice Cream trilogy is how I've always heard it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Weren't you the one who told me it was the Cornetto trilogy?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
Sure that wasn't your one friend?
I've known of it as the Cornetto trilogy forever.
Mm-mm.
Interesting. Yeah, because it's the three colors correspond. The
you got red
for
blood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got red on ya.
Mm.
And then you've got blue for the fuzz for the police, and then green for kind of the sci-fi alien elements in the World's End.
Yep.
So, interesting personal fact. I think I'm the only person in the world whose favorite entry into the trilogy is the World's End. Because so many people lose their shit over Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz.
Mm-hmm.
I don't super care for Hot Fuzz. Like, if that movie and another movie were the last two movies on Earth, I'd be hard-pressed to choose Hot Fuzz.
My mom and her then-boyfriend saw Hot Fuzz and would constantly yell at me that they wanted their 2 hours back.
Okay, so I wouldn't say that. It's not a bad movie, but if that's an option, I'm usually just like, I'm not in the mood. I don't know. It's very weird. I mean, I reference Martin Freeman's part in that movie so frequently.
I know.
But yeah, totally not my jam, and I don't know why.
We're going to watch it again.
But I just told you I don't want
to. You're going to watch it with me.
Okay. Next fact. Wright loves foreshadowing in his films. One of the best examples of this is when Ed makes plans for Shaun the next day to help him get over his breakup with Liz. Ed suggests Bloody Mary first thing, a bite at the King's Head, a couple in the Little Princess, stagger back here, bang bang at the bar for shots. This foreshadows their entire day fending off zombies. The first girl zombie named Mary, his stepfather getting bitten, saving Liz and her two friends, pretending to be zombies, and then a gunfight at the bar.
It's a mouthful. Creators Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg decided to collaborate on a zombie movie together after discovering a mutual appreciation for the work of director George Romero while working on the British sitcom. While working on the British sitcom. That's hard.
76 is a hard number to say.
British sitcom Spaced. In particular, an episode styled after the Resident Evil video game series that paid equal homage to the Master of Horror. Romero, in turn, was so pleased with Shaun of the Dead that he cast Peg and Wright as zombies and zombie extras in the 2005's Land of the Dead.
To find extras willing to be made up as zombies, the filmmakers put out the call on fan forums devoted to Spaced. About 200 extras were eventually recruited.
That's super impressive.
That's really nice.
And that's a cool, like, fan base that you got.
Absolutely. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Yar!
Spurks.
Movie is 1 hour 39 minutes, which is 99 minutes. Our sound mix is Dolby Digital EX.
Dolby is free!
Aspect ratio is anamorphic, 2.35:1. The cameras that they used were Arriflex cameras and lenses. The cinematographic process, basically it's that Super 35 again, which mimics 35 film, but it's slightly bigger. And they exported it out as a 2K digital film. So yeah.
Mm.
Sparks.
Mm. Spronk.
Sparks. Dun, da, 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 da.
Oh, hell.
I got distracted watching the movies, and it was very hard to take notes.
I had to, because it's been so long since I've seen this movie. But we've both seen it multiple times, so we decided to only do one watch.
That was dumb.
That was a bad idea.
That was so dumb.
I had to focus so hard, and you kept trying to talk to me.
That's because that's usually what we normally do.
And I just wanted to be like, fuck off.
You should have told me. Eventually...
I did.
Oh, yeah,
like
eventually.
10 minutes into the movie, it's like, stop talking.
No, it was like halfway through the film.
Wrong. Like, I'm trying to take notes.
You're being really snippy. Are you okay? Yeah, shut up, Juliet.
Can't you see I'm trying to die?
I'm only on my first writing note. We're halfway through the film.
It's like exactly what I said.
It is. I know. I sat there and pouted a little.
I was distraught. Usually I'm like halfway through my thesis 10 minutes into the movie, and this was not the case. Oh, hell in a handbasket. All right. Am I going to kick us off for shit this time around?
No, you have so much more shit than I do.
I feel like this is going to be another instance where you just take all of my notes from me.
That's okay. Only in like cinematography and editing. We can switch when we get there.
I like this plan.
How's that?
Yes. This is a good plan. Fuck. Well, you know that stuff and I don't.
Oh my God. Neither one of us slept last night.
No, we did not.
Just because we couldn't. We're both so fucking tired.
All the time.
Okay, direction. It's gonna be the sleepy. Is we're gonna be slap happy the whole time.
I feel like this is a good movie for this.
Okay, direction. What a way to bring horror and comedy together in your first feature film. There's also this bit of seriousness and drama. It's an all-around balanced film that hits all the notes. He, meaning Wright, along with Peg, had a plan and they executed it almost flawlessly. I can't think of too many humorous, gory films that I've seen that I've not only enjoyed, but have been well executed. Actually, most of the ones that I was trying to think of as I was writing this note out weren't even that gory, but Cabin in the Woods is. Cabin in the Woods is another fine example of, you know, this mix of genre.
Housebound.
That's what it's called, but that's not gory, is it?
It's certainly a horror comedy blend.
Yes, I couldn't think of it, but I didn't think it was gory.
I don't recall.
It's an Australian dark comedy with a paranormal horror aspect. If you haven't seen it, it might still be on Netflix. It's great. Happy Death Day. I fucking love the first one.
Yeah.
I don't think have seen this one, but Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Yeah. I don't know if it's really your thing, but I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it's comedy horror. And gore. And I really couldn't think of too many others. I know that they exist. I even looked up lists and I was like, not really. Like, fun, not great movie.
Right.
So, like, there's fun. There's definitely movies that are enjoyable, but they're not crafted like this.
Right.
And that's the difference. And those are my notes on direction.
Yeah, no, I was actually thinking about Housebound when we were watching this.
Yeah, I can never remember what it's called, which I suck at names. It's a great movie. Let my forgetfulness of the title deter you.
Oh yeah, no, she's terrible with names. But I was thinking about that for very similar reasons that you were, just thinking about like, oh, I was laughing my ass off and then there are some really startling moments and lots of gore and now I'm crying. And thinking about movies that have emotional impact on top of being hilarious is difficult for me. So I was trying to think of what other movies do this really well. Cabin in the Woods popped in my head and Housebound.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
So for me, this isn't a bad thing when I say this.
Oh.
Edgar Wright is Edgar Wright is Edgar Wright. And this hits like an Edgar Wright film.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to know what to say here, honestly. I'm a fan of Edgar Wright's filmmaking. I always feel like he's pushing the envelope when it comes to cinematography, clean editing, and I don't know how to explain what I mean by that. Other than saying that he pushes the envelope of how storytelling is structured. kind of thinking about what he did here with some of his editing and storytelling, and then thinking about the shit that, like, years later, you see him progress and you get to Baby Driver with, like, the live editing of Baby Driver.
Yeah, and like, you know, that's his most recent. This is literally
his first. Exactly. First. But yeah. Even here, I feel like you could, you know, right here, this being his earliest endeavor, I feel like these elements are evident. But you can tell that the focus here is on characters, the humor, and telling a visually comedic story. And he pulled that off well. There's also that ongoing appreciation, knowing that he also co-wrote the script, and that level of comfort and intimacy exists on screen with that dual relationship that he has within it. I also think that, you know me, I get off on that level of trust that a director has with their cast and crew. It's here with Peg also having such great chemistry with everybody that he's acting with, and also Peg having that intimate knowledge, being a co-writer. And so he has his co-writer that he's directing as the lead actor, and I almost feel like you get that sense of everything clicking into place. And almost in my mind, I'm thinking of those like paper chains. Mm-hmm. Like everything is so closely linked, and it just flows, and it just worked. And you can tell that it was such a greatly collaborated endeavor.
Yeah, and many of these people are from space, which is where they, you know, are known. And then, you know, Peg and Frost live together for a long time. Right. And it's just, this is a very intimate film in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. It's a very personal film.
And I feel like you can tell. There's a level of comfort and ease.
And almost, like, carefreeness. But at the same time, obviously not, like, lost money waiting to get this financed, and like Peg's not allowed to pay him back for what he helped lend out to help get this movie going. But yeah, writing,
general writing.
Yeah, I have very general writing. Mm-hmm. This, as we mentioned in some of the interesting facts, this movie is nothing but foreshadowing. Every little thing comes back later in a small way or a big way, and it's usually not forced. It seems very genuine. They seem like very genuine and natural moments. Some examples are, I don't know if you can read my page in case I take stuff from you.
Just go. I figured that you would, looking at your research page, I figured that you might touch on foreshadowing, so I stepped away from it. Because I know that's one thing this movie is known for. So
that's my favorite thing. You know, people you see, just people in general that you see in the beginning come back as zombies. Mm-hmm. When Sean's on the phone, he says goodbye, Liz. They immediately like break up. Yvonne comes back several times. That's his ex-girlfriend. They meet on the street. She comes back multiple times. Sean's cigarettes come back. Liz stole them out of her bin, and they smoke them at the end. Barbara's flowers, they get tossed, and then she finds them when they get back to the pub. As we mentioned again, Ed's plan at the bar. Liz just goes on and on and on and on and on and on. Those are just like, most of those are in the beginning of the movie. This movie is about a bunch of dumb but real people, very few of which actually survive. A little tropey with our bumbling hero surviving and getting the girl in the end, but while outwardly it doesn't seem like a lot has changed, Sean is somehow completely different than when he started. You know, it's very specific to him. Having lived up to at least some of his potential, this feels like a really real movie. Like if there was an apocalypse, a breakout of some sort, not the plague that we have now. I feel like a lot of people would kind of react in these, I need to do something, but I don't have any experience in this, so I'm going to bumble along the way and kind of muck stuff up. I don't know. Feels like a pretty realistic movie to me.
I think it's realistic in that one thing I appreciate about it that I didn't note here is that a lot of our main cast dies.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's realistic. Mm-hmm. And that's something I always appreciate.
In any movie, you and I are both on agreeance on that. We don't necessarily need the happy ending that this does get, but we...
I mean, happy-ish ending. Happy-ish still ending. Not a happy ending, but...
Not completely.
Right. Are those your general notes? Mm. Okay. The dialogue, though.
Yeah.
The wordplay throughout the film is so beautifully written and used at a spectacular frequency.
You would.
If you utilize misdirection too frequently, it becomes expected and boring. If you use explicit language, like the word cunt, too frequently, it loses the element of comedy and surprise, for example. But the way the dialogue is written in this film balanced the comedic tools so perfectly as to never become dull, expected, or overly repetitive, which I think is really difficult for a comedy. The screenplay never falls into its own tropes or traps, which I think is so easy for comedies to do. It's the main reason why I don't like them, is you watch the first third of a comedy and you can stop. Because all you're going to do is you're going to watch the first third three times. And that doesn't happen here, which I really like.
And it's a movie that you can rewatch over and over and over
and
again.
And catch something new every time.
And still like the stuff you know is going to happen mm-hmm. and still laugh your ass off.
Absolutely. Simon Pegg's particular brand of comedy is always more welcome and tolerable to me because he doesn't rely persistently on slapstick humor. So I generally enjoy films that he's written or co-written. So there's huge positives. There are some absolutely huge fallacies written into this movie. While the two main characters are written to be intentionally thick, you cannot expect me to believe that a group of six adults, for example, wouldn't think to kill one zombie when we've seen them make it through hordes of them in order to take a perfectly good car rather than have to make their way on foot. So, Bill Nye, stepdad, they're all in the car when he turns, but rather than get his ass out of the car, everyone get out of the car, kill him, take him from the car, and I'll get back in the car. Rather than do any of these things, they just leave him locked in the car and decide that they need to walk the rest of the way. And that right there, that's how you get the rest of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a huge flaw.
Yeah.
And that takes me out of it so much in that moment where it's here is a moment of writing convenience where all of a sudden they've forgotten that they're fully capable of killing many zombies all at once. We see Sean himself getting to Liz's apartment and out and kill however many with a fucking club.
I mean, this is the first instance of killing a loved one, or they don't kill the loved one, but like I don't know if it's like a minor obstacle that he obviously overcomes at the end where he kills his flatmate and he kills his mom. I don't know.
All six of them though, the people who don't know him.
Yeah.
No. That is such a huge thing for me watching this movie. It infuriates me every single time. And it's just not addressed. It's just a huge, nobody pay attention to this glaring error so that we can make the rest of this film happen.
It was for a joke because Sean's going, it has to be for a joke, a weak joke, but a joke because Sean's like, you know, there's nothing of the man that you married left in there, but he scoots up and turns the music off that he hated before he turned.
That's not.
I'm just saying that might be what it was for.
And
they just wanted
the case,
a weak
then
joke.
That's even worse. And also, why would Liz, Di, and David leave their apartment where they actually were perfectly safe and where all news outlets are telling them to stay?
You don't know that. Nobody knows that.
You have this man who up to that point, the three of them know as being someone who has no capacity to really make great choices, rushing in here, drawing attention,
climbing up the side of a building.
Right. You were perfectly fine and perfectly safe where you were, and you were doing what you were supposed to do. Why? It makes no sense for them to have followed him and left with him. That also drives me crazy. That's also a thing, like, let's pull this movie forward in a way that makes no sense whatsoever, character or writing-wise. Why do they waste time attacking the bar owner by whacking him on his body with pool sticks?
They're dancing.
When they know they have to aim for his head.
They're in time with Queen.
Yeah, they're in time with Queen. This is an instance of, like, this is slapstick comedy. Now yeah. you've gone from this really kind of high level wordplay, intelligent, funny. Oh, I actually had to think about that for a second. This relates to something in the beginning of the movie. Now this is slapstick comedy where you've thrown.
Literally.
Yeah. You've thrown out knowledge that these characters have had and utilized throughout the whole rest of the movie that you have to fuck them up in the head. You've thrown it away. And then it comes back a second later where they're like, oh no, you have to throw the dart at the head. You spent 37 seconds or however long not doing that with three of you. And I, these are just some of the things, and there's a few others that get under my skin and take me out of enjoying the movie completely. Mm. I just become so frustrated with some of the fallacies here. I do like the overall theme that plays out in the very beginning, which is the idea that we as people can be so wrapped up in our own issues and individual problems that we're completely capable of putting up blinders to bigger and more important things happening in the world at large and in our communities. My girlfriend broke up with me, and I'm so devastated about it that I don't realize that the world is literally falling apart. And that's true kind of on a human level. And also, I feel, in individualistic cultures. Mm-hmm. If this film was set in Japan, would it look the same? So, I don't know. I always think that that message is really interesting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of playing out right now.
Well, for some.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But.
Mm-hmm. Juan. So, I did a thing.
Mm.
Kind of like Cabin in the Woods, how each of the five people, like, have a designation.
Cute.
Kind of started that, and I was like, oh, I gotta keep it up. Fuck, it's not that great.
Don't be excited. You built it up.
Yes, it's gonna suck.
No, do it.
Sean. The underachiever turned zombie survivor. This is a decent depiction of your average Joe who has to step up even without a not so solid plan to protect his friends, which sort of fails, and that's not entirely his fault. I think you said this, or you're going to say this, a lot of people can relate to Sean, or we had this conversation outside of this discussion, recorded discussion. I think that was one of the reasons in my youth why I liked this movie so much, because I feel like I saw this character, I was like, yeah, I feel that, which is, I think, hard to write in this genre and make it real. I don't know. Those are my notes on mm-hmm. Sean.
Yeah, I feel like Sean represents every single human being at some point in their life. Mm-hmm. Stuck, stagnant, and in a comfortable groove that they don't feel like escaping from.
I feel that right now.
Well, I also feel like everyone has been thrust into a situation that they weren't prepared for, or a sink or swim situation. Sean struggles so much and makes so many bad calls throughout, but he also owns his choices, takes responsibility when he screws up. I remember watching this the first time when they make it to the Winchester and he goes to check on, I think, the power, and he notices that the zombies have followed him around back. He comes back and he has this look on his face, and Liz asks, like, hey, what's going on? I dead ass expected him to be like, nothing, everything's fine. But he says, we have a problem. Like, mm-hmm. he owns it. And in that moment, I was like, there is some good character progression there. He ends up making some really self-sacrificing and uncomfortable decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Sean is everyone who has ever had to improve themselves in any way, which makes him uncomfortable to watch because he's relatable.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we watch movies to escape. We don't want to watch real life, mm-hmm. which we're the weirdos. We like watching.
Yeah.
Sad.
We like watching shit that makes us cry and hurt and ache. And we're like, oh my God, watching that was terrible. It was so good. That's us. Manchester by the Sea. I'm never watching that again. It was such a great movie.
Yeah, I still haven't watched
it. Yeah, no, we've never watched that again. We bought it immediately when it came out and it just sat on our shelf, never to be seen again. Great movie. We have to cover it for this podcast. I have to put bourbon in my tea for that episode. And for the rewatches. I just need the bourbon
it's
bottle
gonna be
for
like,
the rewatches.
It's going to be a 4-hour episode because we'll be growing up today.
This is a good time to talk about Ed.
Ed. I apparently didn't finish this note, but it's the
appropriate.
The self-interested bumbling idiot.
Also appropriate.
Yeah.
I like this.
He's, you know, he's obviously the sidekick, and he's kind of a stepping stool for Sean, because he's kind of, I mean, Pete kind of says that he's like, does it help having someone around who's more of a loser than you are? And then there's, you know, at the end where he, or towards the end where he, like, takes a phone call and they're trying to get into the fucking Winchester. And Sean loses his shit and actually, like, stands up to him and has that conversation that they've needed to have. And, like, I don't know if Sean would have reached some of his developmental points without Ed kind of fucking shit up and kind of doing the things that he does. So he's very needed. He's a weird, like, continual catalyst.
I loved the parallel. Like you said, so many things come back in this movie. Mm-hmm. I loved the parallel of essentially Sean seeing in that moment that Ed is stuck in the same developmental level of, like, the 17-year-old from the store in the beginning, yeah, answering his phone in a pivotal moment. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really brilliant. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fun fact, the little shaved part on the side of his head, he kept constantly fucking with it. So it's like in each shot, it's different.
Ed?
Uh-huh.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I like that.
He did a lot of weird things.
Oh, God. Didn't he shave his pubes, yeah, so that he would constantly be like scratching and itching, yes, which was what the character was supposed to, like, that's dedication. Like, fucking Nick Frost,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I love Nick Frost.
I'm shocked at how quickly Ed goes from being an absolute log of a person who makes crummy adolescent jokes to springing into physical action when absolutely necessary at the very beginning, and then goes right back to being a giant fuckstick. It's such an interesting turn of pace.
He has weird survival instincts. Yeah. Like, he's weird. He's so dumb and just so lazy but street smart somehow.
Kind of.
It's a weird thing.
It was a fascinating arc and then arc reversal where you see him in the beginning and then Mary shows up in the garden and he gets off his ass and he goes and he does things. But then he kind of turns around right back and he reverts to just, yeah, like he's still just the bumbling idiot.
I don't know. It's like he perks up something new to do. Oh, now I'm bored.
And then he, like, yeah, loses interest. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, Ed, what brand of ADHD do you have? goddamn, he's hilarious at times, cringy at others, but so super incredibly inconsiderate, ignorant, and painfully unaware of the direness of most situations. I do like how his quote-unquote chill personality benefits them in the end when he's willing to stay behind and doesn't put up a fight or insist they try to rescue him or drag him along. And I suppose in the end he winds up essentially not really leading much of a different life than he did before as a zombie. So he kind of fucking wins, doesn't he? He just gets to sit there and play video games.
He's weirdly smart. I feel like he probably was that kid in school that wasn't being properly challenged. So he did bad and then just didn't do anything with his life because he just didn't care. Like, I know people from high school that did that, or they went on, were, like, super successful because they got the challenge that they needed.
See, you say that because I think there are people who act the way that Ed acts who are like that. But in the movie, I don't know that I actually see evidence of that. I mean, you've seen it way more than I have, but I'm like, I can see where you can see those characteristics of people who wind up being like
this. I think he's secretly smart. He purposely crashed a car so he could drive the other car that he wanted. Like, he purposely does stupid shit in order to, like, get something that he wants, I feel.
But that's so detrimental to the situation at hand.
But
That's not survival instinct.
Self-serving.
Self-serving is different than intelligent.
You sure?
Like, that's not a survival instinct in the grand scheme. I see what you're saying. He knows how to get what he wants.
Yeah.
And that does take a level of intelligence. Like, I'll give you that. But, like, holy shit, that's an idiot thing to do still.
Is he idiot, Savan?
Fuck it, yeah.
He's a weird, fascinating character.
He's a fat, yes. He's really, I can't stand him. But then at the end, I'm just like, there's something about you that leads you to be like.
He's got a weird charm as well.
Yes, that. Thank you. You put a word to it. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Liz. the on-again, off-again girlfriend who to me seems like she's basically an anchor for Sean, and she's the least funny to me out of everyone, but is a huge motivator along with Sean's mom to like for him to like more do the right thing, more or less. Like I find her to be the most boring of the five, but she's so necessary. She like gets stuff going. She's literally like the trophy at the end of the race for Sean in this stupid zombie survivor marathon. That was hard to get out.
Got there in the end.
So sleepy.
I wonder how many times in however many episodes this podcast is we've said I'm so sleepy because we record this shit at night. I think Liz is the most boring and the least funny because she's the only one who makes any damn sense in the entire movie.
You're correct.
She's not perfect because this is a horror comedy slash parody, so she's required to make dumb decisions by default. But seriously, she's the most realistic and commonsensical of the bunch of them.
She is, for sure. Yep, she's the realest person in this bunch. Maybe aside from Philip. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we don't get a whole lot of Philip. But yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, I don't feel like there's a whole lot to say about her.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. That's what I have.
Okay. Diane, also known as Di, the failed actress who kind of finally took a stand at the end, similarly to Sean. She's very much in the background until the end when she speaks up about her semi-false relationship with David during an incredibly tense moment. I apparently didn't finish that note either. I got distracted by this wonderful movie. She's interesting as well, and I think the actress is incredibly funny. She has little moments here and there, and I don't feel like you could take her away, but I'm not quite sure what her usefulness is aside from kind of like, this is how zombies act, this is how we're gonna shuffle monkey on over to the pub from this garden and not get noticed, but we totally got noticed because zombies aren't completely stupid.
Interesting. So that's your note.
Yep.
And mine is, she proves herself to be one of the more useful in the bunch. Huh. With her idea of impersonating and infiltrating. She was aware of her surroundings. She's the one who made the observation and went with it rather than clamming up and giving up. When Sean climbed the thing and they were like, oh, are they out there? And he was like, uh-huh. Like, there's a lot of them out there. And then they were basically like, well, what the fuck are we going to do? And she used the knowledge that she had from life before. And she
Sean looks at her and then the camera switches to her. And she's kind of like, what the fuck? What are you looking at me for? So I think that was a team effort there.
Okay. So.
But yeah, you're still.
No, thank you for that. But she uses a skill.
Mm-hmm.
And she teaches them what to do. And it's not her fault that it's unsuccessful in the end. It's the loud idiot's fault.
Well, they're all, the zombies are all following them as soon as they pass by. Like, as soon as the live people pass the zombies, all of the zombies start to turn around and shuffle after them. And then they get to the building and they're still shuffling towards them because they kind of scoot faster once they get closer to the building. And then as I almost called him Nick, Ed, mm-hmm. Ed gets on the phone and then there's a loud tiff as really when they bring.
And they then draw they start
following them. It's kind of like how in The Walking Dead, they can kind of smell you. I wonder if it's a similar thought process.
Yeah, you always have kind of that idea in most. I mean, it's a zombie trope.
Yeah.
That, oh, if you act like them. But I wonder what they would have done in that situation if she hadn't have been with them.
No, for sure.
Yeah.
I agree.
I don't feel like she's the most fleshed out character, but based on kind of she used that moment and her experience to teach the group how to do something to get them to the Winchester. And she did have that conversation with David and Liz and everything like that. I feel like I respect her more than just about everybody else in that group.
Oh, yeah, I can agree with that for sure. I guess in the featurettes, there's a lot of speculation before the featurettes. I guess there's a lot of speculation as to whether or not she dies. And according to the featurettes of the movie, she does, in fact, live and actually goes and lives with her aunt.
No shit. Mm-hmm. It was my automatic assumption that she was dead as shit.
I think it's everybody's automatic assumption that she dies, because she literally just barrels into a zombie horde after her dumb boyfriend, now dead boyfriend.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. I'm so happy to hear that she lives.
Yeah.
Cuckoo.
I think it's still kind of like argued, but I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly what I read, that in the featurettes of the movie, she is said to live.
Nice. Thank you for sharing that with me. That makes me happy.
David, the twat.
Mm.
No one cares about you or your opinion, bro. You're unnecessarily antagonistic towards Sean just because he's been dating the lady you want, who already said no. And then in front of everyone, you try to shoot Sean after he punches you for being a twat.
Mm-hmm.
Goodbye.
A sick day.
Good day.
Yeah, I hate David. He's such a pushover pussy and a goddamn idiot. Not to mention the fact that, like you said, he was quite actually going to murder the shit out of Sean. Like, he was going to kill him.
And that and seems very... I feel very... like
the reaction was not strong enough to the fact that he was going to kill him.
Yeah, I can see that. I feel like that's really real. I think, depending on, like, the group of people you may have, especially if people don't get along in that high-stress situation, that, like... that would happen. Somebody would try to kill
him. Possibly, yeah. But that, yes. The reaction? No. Where was the reaction to that?
I don't know. There's a lot going on.
Like, I remember every time I watch this, whenever I hear the gun click, I always have that reaction of, oh, shit. He was going to kill him. Mm-hmm. That still, blows my mind.
They're, like, in shock at the time, plus everything else that's going around.
I mean, I get that. But still, like, my God. I'm always a bit uncertain as to the necessity of his character.
Tension. He is a separate antagonistic force to the zombies. I'm not saying he's necessary, but I feel like that's the role that they were trying to fill. They needed some sort of... they have several human antagonistic forces.
Exactly. Was he necessary?
Well, then we wouldn't have one of the best scenes at the end of the movie.
Which is fine. Like, watching it, I'm just like, this is, you said that he's an unnecessarily antagonistic force. And I agree with that sentiment, mm-hmm. where I almost think he's an overwritten character. Mm-hmm. Like that unnecessarily antagonistic. It's very, like, this doesn't feel like a real person to me.
They had a subplot that they wanted and like.
That's what if they forced it. He feels forced.
Yeah.
And when characters feel forced, I often find myself questioning what their purpose is.
Hmm.
And what you just said, they had a subplot that they wanted and they made it so. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
Barbara. Aw, so sweet and kind, but don't talk bad about her husband. She's a bit of a liability as she gets bitten fairly quickly and then neglects to tell anyone. But her reasons, though dumb, are kind of understandable considering the mother-son relationship and just what kind of person she seems to be. We don't get a lot of her, but you get enough to kind of, you know, feel the relationship between them, and which is impressive because there isn't a lot to go off of.
Absolutely. I can see where Sean gets both his tendency to be a bit dense, as well as his tendency to think that things are going to just work out okay. And the latter quality is both a positive and a negative for both of them.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Philip. He's just a hard ass that didn't know what he was doing as a parent and tried his best, though it totally came out wrong. It didn't help that Sean didn't seem receptive either to his step-parent.
Yeah. I feel really bad for Philip. It seems like he was just trying to be a good husband and a stepfather.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to deal with a stepkid who was not understanding and unappreciative and an asshat. A stepchild
who's... and a preteen.
Well, and he's a grown-ass adult who looked at his mother in the face and said, he touched me.
Yeah.
I mean, he broke down at me and said, well, that wasn't true. But I mean... what kind of adult-ass person holds a grudge like that when he didn't do anything?
He chased him around the garden with a bit of wood.
Oh, no. His death was a hard watch, and I'm still a bit pissy that they just locked him in a car and left him, for multiple reasons, obviously, but rather than putting him out of his misery, like, did nobody stop to think that you just left him in a car to starved to death to XYZ, like what happens to his body. What, like, yeah, it's not him anymore, but mm-hmm. like thinking of a lot of other, I immediately deflect to like The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kill someone once they're turned to, one, protect others, and two, put them out of their fucking misery.
This movie definitely has like a lot of loose ends.
Yes.
And just kind of focuses on the main character
yeah.
and their life.
Yeah. I feel bad for Philip overall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Production design.
Mm-hmm.
I have baby notes.
Mm-hmm.
All of the zombie makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, that's all.
Yeah.
I really like the kind of the, I wasn't quite sure to put this. I wonder if the speaker is picking up your squeaky, squeaky chair.
I make no apologies.
The kind of the choreography that went into any of like the zombie bashing scenes. Obviously there's choreography that went into Queen when they were bashing John. But like when they go to pick up Liz and they're leaving, like that, I don't know. I just really appreciated the amount of kind of like thought that went into this one. They didn't necessarily need that extra level of thoughtfulness,
yeah.
I guess.
Like you mentioned, I really like this iteration of zombies, particularly the simplicity of their design. They weren't covered in viscera, which is appropriate given that they were recently deceased, like within the day.
Mm.
And I feel as though the changes to the eyes and the minimal bruising and or blood to indicate the manner of death was perfectly effective. I'm all for minimalistic effects.
Yeah.
I love how lived in and legitimate the Winchester felt. If that was a set and not an actual working pub... Was it a pub or was it a set?
It was a pub.
Oh, thank God. I found myself wanting to be in that space, particularly when that's where Sean went to lick his wounds after his breakup. I loved the Winchester.
Yeah, it's another example of just all of the spaces in general feeling real
mm-hmm.
And feeling lived in and used, like the both flats and then the pub.
I think the only time I didn't get that feeling, that feeling was in the... at the very end when they were in the flat together, he and Liz, and it was bright and it was super clean.
Oh, I can
and it
see
was
that.
Like it felt very sterile.
It's the same flat, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's the shed in the back. It just was so totally different and bright and clean and sterile, and like it didn't had that kind of hospital feel to it. But
there could be some.
I think they were trying to go for a major juxtaposition to show how different it was.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay, you can do cinematography.
Okay, thanks. Cinematography.
Oh no, you're gonna steal all of my notes.
I'm gonna take only a longer how much I can talk about cinematography. I love the work that was done in both of the long shots of Sean walking from his apartment to the convenience store, and appreciate the attention to detail that it must have taken to get the parallel shots with the differences. Do you have something to say about that? We should just combine our notes for these in the beginning.
Just let's talk. Let's like write the same shit and then speak yes, at the same time.
In tandem.
Stupid. Do you want to hear my note on that?
Not yes on that in particular. Yes.
This is in all caps.
Okay.
The details and the differences between the two walks to the mini market. Fuck me.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry to anyone listening. You just blew out the like audio recording software.
I'll fix it. Fuck.
That's your note? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Fuck.
I feel like my hair got blown back. It started screaming in my face.
Told you it was in all caps. I felt that I needed to like... get that across to yes. those listening because they can't see my paper.
And just letting them know it was in all caps was not effective.
No. Mm. This scene.
What is grammar?
Guess what? Us reapy.
Screen Tea Podcast. Us reapy.
That's our byline.
We ever have merch.
All right, I'm going to get a t-shirt made.
Yes.
I'm sweepy. Anyway.
I really love kind of the homage to classic horror films with the slow zooms on the characters' faces for reaction shots. I thought that was a really nice way just to kind of fit the movie into the genre. And I know you have specifics, but just in general, the framing throughout is really great. I really like the staging of the actors as well in a lot of the scenes in particular.
I actually didn't comment on specific scenes. But the one that you're referencing that yes. I asked you about is when Sean shows up to Liz's and them's flat. And it's literally just you looking through the window and the way that the camera is set up, everything outside is exposed. Or the camera is exposed to everything that's outside. So the interior is blackened. So you literally have a very lovely frame of Sean at the door multiple times.
Yeah, that is really nice.
Mm-hmm. Kind of back to your staging. A little bit to expand the amount of detail that goes into every little detail of a shot. There are many subplots playing out in the background of the beginning of the movie as people are starting to turn to zombies. The amount of staging that has to go into that to make sure that the audience sees what they need to see is just so intense.
Yep.
Because if you're really not paying attention, there's literally so much shit going on, like the real world, like you're living in this world, you're having this conversation and you don't realize, oh, there's a car crash because somebody's in the process of turning,
right?
They're being attended by an EMT. I can't remember if he gets bitten or not. But yeah, but like that's why he has to get off the bus.
Yeah, there are literal short stories happening throughout the beginning of the film in particular.
Kind of my editing notes kind of play on this. So I'll get to more of those when we get to editing. I really enjoyed the... It feels like they either mounted the gun to a stand with the camera, or they somehow mounted a camera onto the shotgun. Or it's not a shotgun. The gun at the end and like the swing shots that we get when he's changing direction. I really enjoyed those. It didn't quite fit any of the other shots, but I still appreciated that kind of video game aspect that kind of like plays to
first person shooter.
The beginning, you know, top left, which you know, very beginning comes back at the end.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
For editing, I just have two notes. There are so many nice transition sequences throughout. One, even when there's a lack of sequences, I also appreciate the lack of sequences where you just go from one scene to the next with such...
You literally just cut.
You just cut and you go. And sometimes I feel like films try so hard to have specific like sequencing or specific transitions, and it's so unnecessary. And I like what it does for pacing of this film in particular to not have that all the time. Mm-hmm. The transitions that they do have, I really like. I'm thinking of when Sean and Ed are out drinking at the Winchester after Liz and Sean break up. You have like the very quickly the flashes of frame showing songs playing on the jukebox. They're taking the shots. They're having like the flame shots covering with their hands, etc. Just showing the passage of time and showing the passage of their nights drinking, to where you have they get to the Winchester. They're having a discussion. The songs playing on the jukebox. And then you have these frames, and now you know hours have passed, they're drunk off their ass, and you've been told a story in a matter of seconds, and it's just a transition scene. And I just thought that was really well done and really lovely. And the pacing of the film is one of the highlights for me. It's not a long movie. It's an hour 40, which by today's standards is fucking nothing.
Yeah, it's on the shorter side.
And once it takes the time in the beginning to establish the characters and the premise, it is constant go, go, go until the end, which I feel puts you in the mind frame and it puts you in the moment with the characters, which I feel is so important when you have a movie within this genre, because you don't get a break in an apocalypse. And I like, even though this is a comedy as well, I like that it's just, you know, the go, go, go. Even when you have the scene of like Sean and his mother and she's dying, you still have them. The zombies are right there in the periphery getting in, and there's still that tension. I don't feel like there's an unnecessary shot in the bunch, nor is there really a lull or a drag, which is hard to say for a lot of movies.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to jump real quick to a specific one. I thought some of the transitions were a little like cheesy, but appropriate. Because you had like somebody walk across the street, and you basically had a wipe. And normally, I feel like it's a very specific technique from a very specific time when movies were made that were like all the rage. I think it works here as much as I don't care for it, if that makes any sense.
Like you don't really like a lot of transition techniques.
Fucking crossovers, fading, fuck. Now I gotta jump around a little bit. I wanted to comment on that rule. There are so many like major and minor reveal shots, and this plays a little bit with cinematography too, because a lot of it it's either cutting or it's a camera movement, so it's definitely something that's combined. The reveal shots have such a comedic timing. Everything during the opening bar scene, when we're getting introduced to the characters, like you cut to Ed, you think it's a conversation between just two people, and then they keep introducing other people.
That's what I was specifically thinking about in my first note about writing about wordplay. Mm-hmm. Was that scene. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sure. The zombie in the park as Sean's getting flowers for his mom, who's about to eat the pigeons. I think those were my two specific ones, but there's a bunch of them. I really love the opening credits. To me, it's a little reminiscent, sorry about my pen, of things like Cowboy Bebop. You have a very specific edited sequence to music that fits perfectly. It fits what's being shown, and it fits the overall tone of the movie. What you were kind of talking about, what you referred to as the transition sequences, the detail action sequences are some of my favorite. So you got Sean getting ready for work, mm-hmm. brushing his teeth real fast, flushing the toilet, or whatever else he does. They're covering their drinks that are on fire. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of those. And they are just, there's a reason that this editor has won awards. Mm-hmm. He's a wonderful editor, and the movies that we have listed for his other credits are wonderful films. Absolutely. Partly because of their editing.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal at storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked, this is another editing sequence thing, the news report TV sequences. Mm-hmm. Were so lovely. It's not
so
a word.
Lovely.
Edited together, that you have this series of seemingly random TV channels stringing a story together, and it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
The thought that has to go into what the dialogue's going to be. So, like, I wonder how you approach that. Do you write this out and be like, well, we'll cut here? Or do you, like, oh, we could do this, and then they could say this, it's fascinating. The pacing overall is pretty great. It's not only hitting individual beats within scenes and doing wonders with comedic timing on top of the actors' performances, but the overall beats are constantly keeping the story going, which is basically what you said.
Absolutely.
Another minute.
So for music, this film is a perfect example of using music as a background character. The lyrics are woven into dialogue at times, or the titles, lyrics, or messages of songs chosen are literally parallel to what's happening on screen. I feel like Edgar Wright has an intimate relationship with music in his films, and it feels natural rather than being cheesy or forced, and this is a bang-on example of that. I love the use of the soundtrack in this film so much. And kind of like what you were saying, I put this under music and composing. The use of the radio and news reports narrating in the background. Mm. You were talking about specifically as they're watching TV.
No, but yeah, it continues on.
It does. Like, the news reports narrating in the background is really brilliant as well. And it's that aspect of background storytelling where every time you watch, you have to pay attention to every element, everything you're hearing, everything you're seeing. If you look away for a second or answer your phone or stop listening, or you're gonna miss a chunk of something.
This is a very layered
movie. It is.
Movie.
And the music, the background, the soundtrack, the sound editing, it's all integral. which makes this kind of a really engaging and where you're just a part of it.
You're encompassed.
Yes, thank you. It's an all-encompassing watch. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Your music knowledge is far greater than mine. I feel like when it comes to actual songs, you tend to pay more attention, whether you intend to or not. I don't. That's the whole point of me saying all of that just now. A mixture of musical references from old school zombie movies in addition to modern, like, pop and rock songs. It kind of helps tie it to the movies that helped inspire it. And I also often found myself bouncing along with the music. Mm-hmm. This is a soundtrack that I think there have been a handful of occasions where I've heard a song from this elsewhere and was immediately excited. It's like, I don't know this song, but I know this song.
Yes. So. I like when that happens.
Performances.
Mr. Simon Pegg. I love the opportunity that this film provides for Simon Pegg to show off his physical comedy chops, his comedic timing, both physically and verbally, and his sense of movement in front of a camera. He's so comfortable, and this performance has so many small nuances to it that make Sean feel like a fully realized character. Even though his character is damn near a parody of what a real person would be in this situation. Mm-hmm. I think Peg killed it. Horrible pun intended.
Everything you said, because I don't think my notes are really a review of his performance, more so me gushing over him.
Oh, by all means. He deserves all the gushing.
The first time seeing him act, this was the first time I ever saw him act. This is the worst worded sentence. This was the first time I had ever seen him act, and he instantly became one of my favorites. I think he has the most range out of everyone in this entire film by far. Anytime his name pops up in anything else, I'm instantaneously excited, and there have been plenty of movies that he has starred in that have not been good at all. But I enjoyed the film because I enjoyed him.
I feel like my standards and expectations are high for that sentence isn't gonna make any sense. I said that trying to get to a point to say that I really love and appreciate and respect his portrayal of Montgomery Scott in the Star Trek reprisal. I feel like he does that part justice, and I love him for it, and I appreciate him for that.
Yeah, he's not just he can act, he's hilarious, but he can be serious, and he has range. And this movie is, you know, I think it's his first big movie, not his first movie necessarily, if that makes any sense. And he nails it, like you said. He kills it, like you said. And it's just a fine example of what is to come for future endeavors. Mm-hmm. Frost.
Nick Frost. I adore Nick Frost. Mm-hmm. I'm always so happy to see his face pop up in things. His chemistry with not only Simon Pegg, but with everyone that he shared the screen with in this movie is so incredible. He was such an ass and so easy to dislike, which also somehow kind of, while also somehow worming his way toward being endearing. And I think that it's such a difficult endeavor for an actor to pull off. Nick Frost not only managed that balance, but he excelled in it.
I think I have a similar note. I feel like it is hard to play this bumbling idiot that actually has a fair amount of kind of subtle survival instincts. So kudos to Frost, kind of what we were talking about when we were talking about the character itself. He's another, like, naturally comedic dude, just like Simon. And he popped up. On a whim, I watched The Badlands. Mm-hmm. And episodes. And then he randomly popped up, and I'm pretty sure I squealed. It's like, what? And then he was in that Doctor Who special as Santa.
Yep, as Santa. That's what I was just about to Google up images from that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, he just... anyone who can pop up in Doctor Who and make it better, just, yeah, Nick Frost is fucking Santa Claus in Doctor Who. It's just a gift.
And he, I'm not sure if he's had as many opportunities or has willfully taken as many opportunities to show what kind of range he has, and I'm not sure if he has as much range as Peg, but he certainly does have range. You can even see, you can see it between the two of them over the trilogy.
Absolutely.
As you were kind of pointing out last night when you were reading about
Yeah, they switch roles and they switch dynamics in every one of the three films. So
I want to see more of what he does, and I don't feel like his filmography is that big, to be frank. But anyway, I'm going to make shit up as I go because I didn't write notes for these bitches.
All right. Kate Ashfield. I think that Kate Ashfield really managed to hold her own and keep attention on her performance when sharing the screen with Simon Pegg or Nick Frost. And she really shined when on screen with any of the other performers. I found myself wishing that she had been given more because I liked what I saw and just didn't feel like she had the opportunity to really show what she was made out of.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think she has kind of some of the best moments at the end of the movie, especially when it's like in regards to Sean's mom dying.
Yeah.
You know, she is responsible for some critical moments, and I think she, like, this movie could have fallen flat had she not been able to, like, help with those scenes.
Lucy Davis, she did fine. I don't really have much else to say other than she played her role well with what she was given.
Yeah, I think she's pretty funny. Some of the other things that she pops up, and I don't know if just because I love this movie so much, I saw her pop up in something, and then I saw her pop up in Wonder Woman, and then I saw her pop up in Sabrina. I was just like, oh, yay! even though it's... You know, I didn't finish watching Sabrina. I only got a couple episodes in, but I was still, like, so excited every time she was on. She just seems like she's kind of like a minor character actress. Mm-hmm. Hasn't quite gotten farther.
Then Dylan Moran, or Dylan Moran, he played a spectacular douchebag.
Yes.
I couldn't stand the sight of him, and therefore I applaud his performance. He made me think, I looked at him as like, this is a grown-ass fucking Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. I kept thinking it. It's like, this is epilogue-compliant Harry Potter.
That's funny.
Look-wise.
In Run, Fat Boy, Run, which also stars Simon Pegg, he's a bit of a twat in that as well, but kind of in a dude bro friend way, like actual friend way. So it's interesting to kind of see... It was interesting to see their relationship character-wise between the two movies.
I bet.
So he's definitely... I have no idea what else he's in, really, that I've seen, but he's fun to watch. He's definitely talented.
Etceteras.
I got T.
Do it.
T. I always find it interesting, different iterations of zombies and how people... the mythology behind different iterations. And these zombies seem to retain some semblance of like their former personalities. Like Philip turns off the heavy metal because he hates it. It seems like they get stuck in routines. It's a little similar to Fido, I feel.
A little bit, yeah. I had a Fido feel at the end. Mm-hmm. Hardcore.
I think you kind of touched on this a little bit, but some of the parts haven't aged very well.
I have a note.
Especially some of the language used.
Mm-hmm. I have a specific.
Yeah, okay, go for it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay, so I'll get there. I love the fact that Edge is outwardly, like, he's the first one who outwardly says the word zombie.
Mm-hmm.
We see a trend of avoidance with identifying zombies as such, as I feel kind of like this meta avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
In zombie media, which, again, the first example that pops in my mind is The Walking Dead. We have the walkers, the freaks, the blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
The whole incident is very meta, which I appreciate. With Sean even bringing up the idea of, well, you can't say the Z word. Which comes back multiple times. But it was just such a gleeful moment for me. I loved it so much.
We're not using that.
Here's another thing that I didn't call out earlier. I have a lot of issues with
Philip in the car in general, why would they put Philip in the car with them after they literally watched him get bit in the throat? Why would they even put him in the car? Juliet, why? There's so many flaws with that entire plot with Philip in the car and the change and the...
I think it was a way to get his mom to go with him.
You're probably right, but it doesn't make any sense in every survival...
I'm aware. We would survive horror-ness for the most part. I feel like we would have better chances than a lot of people in horror films.
Okay, I'll give you that. Yes. Doesn't mean our chances would be spectacular, but we would have better chances than others.
Better chances.
It just doesn't make any sense, and I hate it so much. But yes, like you were saying, gotta call it out. Ed casually dropping the N-word as a greeting. Whew, not great. Hardcore cringe.
I want to know how that got passed.
Unnecessary. And I feel like it's worsened by the fact that this is one of the fucking whitest casts in any movie I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Why?
I don't know. I'd have no answers for you.
That.
I had completely forgotten.
Hurts my soul.
That is dropped. And as I was doing research, I saw an article that I couldn't find again per whatever wording I had used to search, where it mentions, like, you know, Ed drops the N-word. I'm like, what the fuck? And then we watched it. I was like, oh, fuck. Why? God damn it. Nick Frost, what?
I just, like, I had this reaction where, you know how, like, you put salt on, like, an octopus on a plate and whatever, and it just, like, squirms and, like, does the... Like, that's what my body is. I was like, oh, God. This was 2004, so yeah. When you say it doesn't age well, I'm like, this was mid-2000s. There's no... No. It was mid-2000s. This is a white cast movie with a white director and white writers and an all-white cast. Like, there was no fucking reason why that was necessary in the first place.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
I just want it to be like if...
I don't know how the culture is in England, if that makes any difference. I'm not saying it does, but it is an English film.
I don't think that.
Okay, I was just... A side point. A minor point.
I mean, you're right, because I know nothing about the dynamic. But I just mega cringe.
If there's anybody from England listening, and you do know, let us know.
Yeah, I know we have an Irish friend.
We have a couple European people. I don't know if they're still listening.
Who listens on the reg? But yeah, I hate that moment so much.
Yeah, no, it's not a good moment.
No. Yeah, so that's unnecessary. And then just gotta like call out and holler to the 1 word, 1 minute Martin Freeman cameo. Hi, Martin. I love you.
Tee. Mm-hmm. What was your favorite part?
My favorite part? There's a girl in the garden. I love this scene because not only is it a turning point from a comedy to a horror comedy, but this is where we get to see character growth starting for Sean. And we get that moment of fucking finally, you absolute dipshits, when these assholes finally realize that the zombie apocalypse has started. Also, the way that Nick Frost delivers this line gives me the mega heebs. It's the line, yeah. This is the line. There's so many lines in this movie. Like, with you, it's always, there. You got red on you. This is the line that comes to mind instantly when I think of this movie. Always. Just the way it's delivered and said. And we're not on him when it's delivered. We're on Sean. And the line comes out of nowhere. And it's so stoically said. And it's just a casual observation.
Like
a
hint of, like, unsuredness.
Kind of. But it's not even in his typical cadence. There's no joking about it.
Yeah.
Like it's just like, there's this observation of something odd. And
you can feel it.
Yes. And I love that moment. There's a girl in the garden.
I can hear him saying it.
Yeah, that's my favorite. Every time it gives me chills. What's your favorite?
Both of the long one-take shots of Sean going to the mini market.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Oh, they're beautiful.
They're really nice.
And detailed.
Yep. Fuck. Fuck.
Fuck. That's all I can say about those. Like, that has to be on YouTube, and I want to link it, and I want to force everybody to watch it.
Yeah.
Because it's literally one long take with so much shit happening in the background two different times. And it's such a similar thing that you can be like, oh yeah, that's that. This is what it was the first time.
This is different. This is, yeah.
And it starts out kind of innocuous because you kind of see someone shuffling. You're like, something's wrong. What's wrong? And he keeps walking. He's like, oh, there's shit broken. It's so good. Fuck. God damn it. Hmm.
What's your least favorite part?
Hmm. When Sean's mother dies.
Yep.
It's just hard to see him have to face that loss when he's already lost his stepfather and when he's tried so hard to protect her. Also, seeing Simon Pegg plead and cry is not enjoyable. No. 0 out of 10 would not recommend.
Yep, that's my least favorite part for those reasons.
Yeah.
Yep.
What did you rate it?
10 out of 10.
It's like, she's holding up 10 fingers like she's about to jazz hands at me, but it's like, but they can't see you.
10 out of 10. 10, 10, 10.
10, 10,
10. I almost 10, gave 10, it 10. Like a 9, 9 and a half. I was like, nope. I love this movie. I love it every time I watch it. I laugh my ass off every time I watch it. And just, I love it so much. This has been my favorite movie for 15 years. You're similar with Pan's Labyrinth because that came out in 2006. When did you see it in 2006?
I did. I saw it in the movie theater.
So did I. My dad.
So I have like a 14-year run with that one.
Mm-hmm. They're both great movies.
Mm-hmm.
And Arrival is a close second, even though it is a much superior film to this, which I think I also gave a 10. So.
Mm-hmm. You did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I saw what you rated it just because I was printing it out. I was printing it out and it was on the outline. It was literally on the side. I could not avoid it.
You can. You just have to not. You have to avert your eyeballs.
I can't when I'm printing it. It's literally right there under the printer button.
That's why I print stuff from my phone.
Well, apparently you're going to have to do that next time.
You also have a phone.
Or turn off your fucking outline.
What did I rate the movie, Juliet?
No, you say it, because it's your rating. I don't want to speak for you. I can make shit up. They won't know.
Does my rating surprise you?
A little.
Why?
It doesn't. It doesn't, because you were fuming about the things that upset you when we were watching. And I was like, she's going to tear this movie a new one. I thought she liked this movie. But considering those... and how much you said that you do like this movie, I guess it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. So I almost rated it a 7.5.
Whoa!
But I had the kind of thought, kind of like you had, is I almost rated it a 7.5 because of the things that I didn't like about it, but struggled with it because of how wonderfully crafted it is. So I rated it an 8. And because of how much I enjoy what I do enjoy, it's... yeah, I rate it an 8. It's entertaining. It does so many things well. It's just like in every movie, in most movies, there are fallacies. And the fallacies in this drive me fucking bonkers. You know, it's a good movie. Mm-hmm. It's not a favorite of mine, but it's a strong movie and definitely a strong contender for comedies that I like, because those are few and far between.
Yeah, some of the things I were reading were referring to it as a rom-zom-com.
No.
Romantic zombie comedy.
Stop. Dislike button. Unsubscribe.
So yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, 8 out of 10. It's, you know, it's Edgar Wright. I know nothing about him personally.
I don't really either, other than the fact that he and Anna Kendrick used to date.
You would. but I just know that I like the films that he makes and I like his style.
Yes. So yes, 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 yes.
I'd be hard-pressed, I think, to think of a film of his that I don't like or that I don't really feel, that I don't vibe with.
Mm-hmm.
So
I haven't seen The Adventures of Tintin.
I haven't either.
Mm-mm. It's like a weirdly animated... like rotoscoped movie.
Mm. Interesting.
With Jamie Bell, I believe.
Hmm. So yeah. I don't know if I drink my tea. I have a gulp.
Oh.
It's all gone now.
You can't gulp.
Ooh, you can't gulp
Big Red. And it's cold.
You know what I just thought of? I'm still Big Red.
I can't wait till we do Bring It On. We don't own it, so we'll have to buy it. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Unless it's streaming somewhere.
We might have to buy it.
Torrents. Fuck. I could sit here and just give random little snippets from that movie all day.
That was a girl crush movie. For
oh,
sure.
God, yes. Elijah Dushku. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, that's just my poor gay heart was Elijah Dushku and whoever the fuck plays the brother. I was like, those siblings. Oh, yeah. I'll take one of each, please.
I think his name's Brandon.
Maybe.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anywho.
Sorry for that tangent.
It's okay. I started it.
Yes, you did. I was apologizing to the people listening.
I'm not apologizing for my own bad behavior. I'm still. Juliet.
Leisha.
This is a cheerocracy. Okay.
Hey, Leisha, where can you find us? Online.
We have an email address. thescreenteapodcast@gmail.com.
We have a website. ScreenTeaPodcast.com.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ScreenTeaPodcast.
And you can find us on Twitter at ScreenTeaPod.
Okay.
Jesus.
Who's Kevin Blessin for you this evening?
I've been debating in my head. I bet
you have been.
I'm going to have to go. Oh, fuck, I don't know. Can I do two? Because it's my favorite movie.
No, I'll probably do the one that you don't.
Edgar Wright.
Okay. I will Kevin Bless Simon Pegg.
Yay!
The dynamic duo. And we'll do kind of a little mini Kevin Bless to you to Nick Frost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And while we're at it.
Jesus. I couldn't have two, but we're going to do four. Like,
we have two?
Fucking Christ.
You can have two and I can have two. Okay. Do your two.
You've technically done two already.
Do your two.
Kevin Bress, Edgar Wright, and Simon Pegg.
And Kevin Bress, Nick Frost, and Martin Freeman.
I word-mouthed it before she said it. I knew what you were going to do.
Gotta do the things. All right.
Jesus.
Thank you for enjoying this mess.
Oh my God.
You guys asked for this. Don't forget it.
I expect replies to the post on this. I expect people to listen to this one.
And next week you get to, oh my goodness, Knives Out's going to be fun.
That seems a little intimidating.
It does. It's going to be great. We're going to kill it. We're going to do awesome. It's Rian Johnson.
I know, and that's all.
Exactly.
My two favorite directors.
Look at you. How did you get so lucky? Anyway, I have Chris Evans and Lakeith Steinfeld, so I'm golden.
Just everybody in that movie.
I know, but those two in particular.
Yummy, 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 yummy.
All right, folks. Please stay safe, wear your masks, wash your hands. If you're a dipshit who doesn't wear masks, stay your ass inside.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.